UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded! Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
Time now for the V Show with Bob Valvano on your sports station, ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
So, Paul McCartney wrote a song. He's still writing music. He wrote a song that's one of his relatively newer songs. It's called Who Cares? It's pretty good. Who cares what the idiots say is the refrain. And nowadays, when everybody and their brother has a blog and a website and an opinion in social media, we are all, everybody, it seems like everybody, it used to be just public figures, now everybody is subject, if you want to say anything publicly anyway, I mean, it could be something as innocent as posting a recipe, somebody's going to want to make a comment. That's just kind of how we roll. And so his point is somewhat well taken. Who cares? I mean, if you are doing what you think is right and doing it the best you can, then you really don't have anybody to answer to. But there's a couple of problems with that. One is, you know, to some degree, you have to care a little bit. I mean, if everybody, the whole world, not always, sometimes the whole world's telling you you're nuts and it winds up you're the right one, but sometimes people are telling you, stop doing that. It's annoying all of us. It's breaking things. It's hurting people. You might want to listen. That's the first thing. The second thing is when you're in certain businesses, you kind of have to listen to what the people say, like this business. I mean, I enjoy hockey very much. I grew up with hockey. To come on and do a lot of segments on hockey on this show would not be listening to what the people say, because generally around here, the people are going to say, why are you discussing hockey? We don't have a hockey team here. What are you doing? Fair point.
We do. We have UofL club hockey team.
You have to listen to the people to some degree. Here's where it gets dicey. It gets dicey for a couple of reasons for me. If you listen to people, over time you have to figure out, okay, are they credible to listen to? In other words, you know, if I suddenly went over to U of L and started making critical comments about their biochem program, I guess I could do it, but correctly you would say, well, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. Yes, that's, in fact, I don't. But when you have, you know, people that over time you give credibility to, well, then you are correct to say, okay, let's see if we can make some sense of this. And what I realized today is about college basketball this year, we just have to come to terms with one thing. And once we do, a lot of the source of friction, which is okay, because, I mean, there are people like the friction. Why would you do that? Then we can't fight. I want to fight. All right, well, that's your business. But at least understand what it is, because here's what's going on. If you didn't see it, Pat Forty wrote a piece last night after the fight at Kansas State and Kansas, which was hideous. I mean, I respectfully will disagree with Locke. I mean, if you want to be entertained by rumblings, and go watch it. There's plenty of places to do it legally. Go watch an MMA. Oh, go watch boxing. Listen, did anybody get hurt? Fortunately, they didn't, but they could. I mean, I saw Rudy Tomjanovich almost get killed by Kermit Washington's punch. And that was a long time ago. I know that's an anomaly, but the fact of the matter is, yes, call me a get off my lawn guy. I don't think it has a place in the game, especially in college. If you're supposed to think that it's supposed to, you know, represent some sort of a lesson in how to conduct yourself and things like that, I don't think it has a place. Okay, so that said, let's start with that. But even if you're not taking that approach, what Pat wrote was a piece that talked about how despicable it was and blah, 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 and then went on to kind of extrapolate that over the whole year for college basketball. Like, oh, wow, this is a year where college basketball, it's a terrible product, and this is going to be the most memorable thing that's gone on this year. That's an indication of how messed up it is. And he obviously thinks Kansas is right in the middle of all the cheating stuff, and that's a different topic for it. He did research on that. That's his business. But the fight has nothing to do with that either, nor does it have anything to do with the product going on. And I wrote him a note back. I was respectful to him. He was respectful to me. I tried to be respectful again to him. But it was a difference of opinion, and that's what I realize now. And here is why the who cares what people say thing has to come into play, because it's always dangerous when you kind of sum up what somebody else is saying, because they might say, well, that's not exactly what I meant, but I think you'll get the gist of it. His point was, it's not a good product this year, college basketball. And he said, you're being protectionist. And I said, well, maybe some guilty as charged, because the analogy I gave with him is if you really like the Beatles and somebody you're around that you respect is just bashing the Beatles, your first instinct's going to be to say something just because, hey, wait, I really like them and here's why I like them. I love college basketball. So there is a little of that, but it goes beyond that. I just think it's an oversimplistic approach. And here's why I say that. And tonight's a perfect night to bring it up. Zion Williamson is going to make his NBA debut tonight. And people, I happen to, as I come in, heard a national commentator say, boy, I really want to see that. I haven't been excited about watching a college basketball player's debut in forever. But what was going on when Zion was in college? What was a large segment of the viewership and listenership saying? Oh, my God, Zion again? Zion again? Oh, you people, you just love Duke. You don't give attention to anybody else. It's all Duke. It's all Zion, Zion, Zion. So again, how do you win? When they hammered it, beat you over the head with it, and I agreed to some degree. In fact, I agreed with it a lot. There were a lot of other good players and a lot of other good stories, but I also understood ESPN's point of view, which was, we're going to televise what people are going to put their eyeballs on. And people had a lot of eyeballs on Zion, so I could see both sides of it. But the point is, there were a lot. It wasn't just a small smattering of people. There were a lot of people, enough with Zion already. Okay? So now, you get a year like this year where there is no Zion. He's a generational kind of player. He doesn't come along every year. I think he's going to prove to be that kind of player. We'll see. His first step at the NBA is tonight. But the fact of the matter is, they don't come along every year. And teams that are, like Kentucky's 38-win team don't come along every year. There's all-time great teams that pop along every once in a while. But the fact of the matter is, if the implication is it's only worth watching when those things happen, I would respectfully very much disagree. And that's the point. And what I'm saying is, it's kind of like, if you evaluate a league's quality by the very best team in the league, or you evaluate a league by how competitive they are going top to bottom, you're going to have a hard time reaching a consensus. That's a matter of opinion. That's a matter of taste. You see it this way, I see it that way. Well, it's the same thing with this. If you are going to, every time a game happens over the weekend, be absolutely flabbergasted that, oh, a number one lost, or, oh, it's just a year of there's no dominant teams. Okay, I can't convince you otherwise, but respectfully, you can't convince me either that I've watched on television nights where I've sat home and flicked between five games. I said the other night, it was about a week ago, there were five games on. Every one of those games was compelling to watch, maybe just because I love basketball, but they were compelling to watch. They were all one or two possession games going back and forth, really competitive, highly high energy, high effort, good coaches. What's so bad about that? Why does there have to be? And I'll respectfully say this, because, Locke, I did actually hear the end of your show. Here's a perfect example of why I just see it differently. Just see it differently. Locke's going through. He got a text from somebody who said every UK game that they've won this year, you've pissed on. And he went through the list, and he said, oh, that's not true. Well, blah, blah, and he went through. And he said, well, no, Fairleigh Dickinson, they won by 31, and there was very little to find fault on there. Respectfully, I would disagree. The close win against Georgia is much more impressive than beating Fairleigh Dickinson by 31. Fairleigh Dickinson's terrible this year. They're a mid-major who lost all their players from last year. I know that league because I used to be in that league. They're awful. Beating them by 30 is way less impressive than winning an SEC game by 8 or 10. Not even close. So that's the point. So if you're going to see it that way, if you're just going to gauge it that, well, they got to win by a million points, you're absolutely going to have a self-fulfilling prophecy because nobody's winning by a million points this year. Everybody's getting peanuts. So understand that. So if you're going to lament that, you know, the few people who used to get steak and a wrap on the plane aren't getting it this year, okay, I'd rather look at it and say, man, it is damned entertaining because every damn game is pretty competitive. And it's not like there are terrible teams. I mean, he would talk about, well, there's no team like the Super, the Blue Bloods, Duke. Duke is very good again. Duke has a chance to make a deep run in March. They got a chance to win the whole damn thing. That's the truth. But the fact of the matter is this year there are, normally by this time you say, okay, well, there's maybe, you know, 15, 12 teams that you say can make it. There's probably 30 teams that realistically you could say has a chance to make the Final Four. I saw one last week. Arizona played a game against Colorado. They weren't even ranked. Not even ranked. And I'm telling you, if they play like they did against Colorado, they can play with anybody in the country, any day, anywhere. The problem is they don't, and they haven't. But that doesn't mean it's not worth watching, really? Pat, that's what Pat said. It's just, I mean, you know, I feel like I'm going to be, the Kentucky people are going to think I'm bashing them, but I think Evansville winning at Kentucky was probably as compelling a story nationally as the fight. I mean, there's been a bunch of interesting stories that way, and there's a bunch of interesting players. I mean, and you know, and I hate to say it, but the Pac-12 people talk about the East Coast bias. I think there is some of that. Because I'm not even sure how many of you seen. I mean, the hardcore fans will say, I've seen him. He's really good. But this kid I walked away dazzled from, Nico Mannion, the kid who's the son of Pace Mannion, the former NBA player. What a player he is. And, you know, and they've got three players of that caliber. And the only reason they bring that up is because that's the team I just did. But I'm not suggesting that that's the only one or the, oh my God, that's the only sleeper. There's a whole bunch of teams out there that are worth paying attention to. I mean, isn't that the interesting part of the drama? Auburn was great for a month and a half. Now they've lost a bunch of games in a row. I mean, that's part of the drama. That's the story. I mean, you watch a movie and you know, the hero doesn't be heroic in the first scene. He's heroic for the next hour and a half. You go home and say, well, that was boring. He's in trouble. He's up. He's down. He's this. He's that. This guy's a hero. Maybe he's not a hero. This guy's good. Maybe he's not so good. So what's so bad about that for college basketball this year? What is so bad about that? But I'm saying, I have to come make peace with the fact, and we're all going to have to make peace with the fact, I think, that not everybody's going to see it that way. And I'm not here to make you see it my way. See it however you want to. But Locke made the point that he doesn't want to listen to shows where every time somebody wins, oh, they're great. They're great. So he finds that boring and repetitive. Well, respectfully, what I would suggest is this take on every win that they have has become repetitive, not because I think you don't really believe it. I know you do. But because that's the way it is now. We talked about the Fred Carter approach. You know who you are by this point in the year. This is who we are. This is who the teams are. There are no super teams out there. And when you win, way more often than not, you're going to win a close game. So if every time you walk away and they don't win by 25 and 30, you go, oh, well, okay, they didn't impress me. Well, right, well, fine, that's your business. But to me, that's repetitive because that's what we got right now. Doesn't mean they can't win the national championship, whoever you're speaking about. Doesn't mean they can't go to the Final Four. Doesn't mean they're going to. The margin of separation is very small. I think it's tremendously entertaining. It's one of the reasons why, to be honest with you, I've always preferred the NFL to college football. College football I could tell you in August the five teams that they're going to consider that can win the national championship. And I'll be honest with you, as much as I love the NBA, that was a little bit of concern with me recent years there, too. But now the NBA this year has got much more competitive balance, and the NFL always has competitive balance. I mean, Tennessee's done, but the fact that their fans had a great run to the conference championship game, I mean, technically a Final Four, if you want to look at it in those terms, very entertaining, much more entertaining. And now basketball has that. They've always had it more than football. There's always been a George Mason to crash the party, a South Carolina to crash the party. Hell, my brother's team won the championship with 10 losses. You don't know what's going to happen, and that's the beauty of it. I mean, you could argue that, you know, with one game, it's not as fair as an NBA playoff that you have 7 games to prove yourself, but so what? I don't think anybody who's won it was a non-deserving winner when the tournament was all said and done. They're all deserving, and us as spectators were entertained. And this year, I would suggest me, again, I'm just speaking just for me, I'm even more entertained. Because the one thing I've always said, and I said this on yesterday's show, college football, I hated and still hate the way they crown their national champion. But the fact of the matter is, they would always throw in your face, well, okay, but you know, only 4 teams going. You better watch every week because every week's like a playoff. And I think it's a little contrived, but okay. Well, basketball, it's, I don't even have to watch until 3 days before the tournament. Well, you better watch this year. Carolina going to the tournament? Virginia going to the tournament? Don't know. Syracuse going to the tournament? Those are pretty blue blood programs, aren't they? Are they guaranteed that they're in? I'm not so sure. So I think it's very entertaining, and I think that you take it for what it is, which is Kentucky's a good team. Are they one of the teams that has a chance? Absolutely. Is it like their 38 win team? Of course not. Of course not. There's nobody out there like that. And you know, so you can bang your head against the wall and say, well, I want every year for us to eat 38. No, well, okay, good. Right, people in hell want ice water, but I mean, it's. You know, this is the landscape, and you can do what you want with it. And I get Pat is choosing to say, well, there's no Zions, there's no, you know what? I respectfully, and Pat will probably come on and fight me to the teeth on this if he were. When you have done it as long as he has, I call it the Mike Lupica, the other guy too, the guy who wrote, the guy from Detroit who wrote the best selling books that don't have anything to do with sports. You know what I mean.
Mike Royko?
No.
Sorry.
Oh, come on. You know, the people you meet in heaven, that guy. I'll go look it up because it's ridiculous. I can't remember his freaking name. He's a best-selling author. He's on TV a lot.
Did you do Tuesdays with Maury?
Yes, that guy.
Yeah. I can't remember his name. Neil something, I think.
Nope, not Neil. Definitely not Neil. It is Mitch Albom. Mitch Albom. Thank you, texters. Okay, Mitch Albom. Mitch Albom started as a sports writer. Mike Lupica is a sports writer. Kornheiser is a sports writer. They're brilliant guys. They cover a lot of sports with restless minds and high intellect. Pat's like that. Pat's a very bright guy. And he's covered sports. And it's not just one sport. It's not like, boy, I fell in love with basketball, I'm just going to cover basketball. He covers football and college basketball. And he's does human interest stories about, you know, people in those sports. And he's done scandal. He's done hard reporting. Those people eventually get bored. And what happens when they get bored is then they branch into other things. Kornheiser wrote a general interest column in Washington for a long time. And it was very highly regarded. Albums written best-selling books. Lupica has written books that have nothing to do with sports. John Feinstein writes fiction. It's the way to occupy their restless minds. You're bored now because you don't have you've seen basketball, and it's not that compelling to you. I don't mean it in a net critique, you know, to be critiquing. It's just an observation that I've been here, I've been there, I've done this for so long, I've traveled, and there's no gigantic story that comes out at you this year. There's no Zion, there's no 38-0 team, there's no, so you make, you imply that the product is subpar. I disagree. I don't think it's subpar. I think it's not as entertaining for you because you are looking for the big thing because you've been doing it for a long time. And you've covered a lot of things, Olympics, other things. So yes, I get it. But to me, I do love it. And I find it, are there great teams? No. Are there different stories that are interesting? Yes.
Absolutely. No question. That's the whole point. To me, so you got different coaches. Like this guy at Alabama, Nate Oates. I did his game at Buffalo 2 years ago. He's an interesting guy and a good coach. I don't know. Let's go see. You know, and everything else in the world, we're loving to look for the new stars, the up-and-coming guys, except in college basketball. In college football, we want the same guys. We want to have the same 10 people that we follow. What's so wrong with having some new characters on the stage? It doesn't take away from Coach K. It doesn't take away from Cal. It doesn't take away from, I mean, Roy Williams is, I'm sorry for him, but this is an interesting thing to observe. It's an interesting thing to observe Tony Bennett. Tony Bennett's team, truly, is one of the most challenged offensive teams I've seen all year. How this guy is winning games in the ACC is a miracle. That's how good a defensive coach he is. But, I mean, the scores are going lower and lower because they can't score, and so they're going to wind up trying to beat you 28-27 soon. It may not be interesting, but they're winning games. I mean, you know, but the fact of the matter is that's interesting. How's he going to do? I mean, there have been some teams out there. I'll be honest. You look at some of these pre-conference games. I mean, my wife could, your wife, your mother could win with the, given that team and play. As long as she knows I got to have five people on the floor, you'd be fine. So I don't find that
what
compelling.
What type of defense is Mel running?
I don't find probably something very aggressive for starters. I mean, I don't find that particularly entertaining. I'll be candid with you, and I don't want to sound like this because over like this because, the same way I was talking about the reporters and I think they've got active minds and sometimes they get bored. There's two things. One, I don't mean to imply anything about myself, but yeah, I don't think I'm a dumb guy, and I do have a lot of interests. And secondly, I'm tremendously grateful to have the opportunity to do the games for Louisville and for ESPN. Of all the things in my life, I value those probably more than anything else. And so, I can't overstate that. But there are some games in the preseason and, going for the last few years that I go, I understand why fans wouldn't come. What the hell do you want to see this game for? I mean, there's nothing interesting about this game. But that's not the conference season. That's not where we are now. And there's plenty of good games early in basketball. There's way more than there are in football, because in football, you're worried about eliminating yourself. Basketball, you're not eliminating yourself. So there's a bunch of challenging games. There's tournaments in all those places, and they actually crown a champion. And I think it's very interesting. But yes, some of those games, I get it. Those are not compelling. But I think that once we've gotten to this, this part of the season, they're damn near all compelling. And they're all meaningful. I mean, like I said, there's a bunch of blue bloods that are really teetering. Seriously, seriously teetering. So you better watch. And let's see if we get some new guys. I mean, this guy at Rutgers, Steve Peichel. Well, I mean, what a job he's done. What a job that he's done. Unbelievable. He's just done a fantastic job of, has taken that program from absolute the doldrums to being a relevant program. That's an interesting story. So like I said, it's you see it however you want to. Obviously, anybody can see things however they choose to. It was my observation that part of the dispute, if you want to call it that, each time is because if you see it the way Pat sees it, then that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that, but you're not going to reach a common ground with somebody who sees it like the people that see it as I do, which are entertained by this and find it compelling and find it interesting. If you see it, there's no great teams, there's no great players, yeah, there aren't. I get to debate that with you. And so if you say, well, but if there aren't, then I got other things to do. I'm not interested. Okay, whatever. So, wise-ass texter who sends me every day. And once again, if you actually listen, I'm not telling you to listen to like or dislike anything. I'm just explaining why. Every day we seem to have a discussion on, I listen to other shows and they feel like, how could you say that? How could, whichever side you're taking, how could you say, because they aren't choosing to see it the way you choose to see it. So that, but I think it's interesting. And the fight last night is not, symptomatic of problems in college basketball. It was an ugly, terrible incident, and it was inexcusable. I've often wondered when something like that was going to happen, though, because it started when it's kind of like one of those things where, like the mafia, this is for Joey to nose, this is for Harry to toe, this is for Sammy to thumb, it went back and forth. Teams that were winning, some very often have their bench players in, and they wanted to play, And so they'd play till the buzzer, and they would score, and the team that was losing would be like, thanks, you really had a dunk on us while you're ahead by 27. That's a bunch of crap. So coaches became very cognizant of jumping in and saying, hey, you know what, as soon as they see that shot clock turned off, they say, no, you know what, hold the ball. Just absolutely, and you see them jump up and tell the players to stop. And so everybody has to stand around for 30 seconds doing nothing. And I said, you know, forget about the team that's winning. How about the team that's losing? They didn't have to buy into this. Suppose they go and trap the guy. And sure enough, they stole the ball from D'Souza, and the guy went ahead to try and score, and he blocked it. If you're going to play, I'm going to play. At that point, it would have been okay, but then it got ugly because he was pissed that the guy embarrassed him by taking the ball away. Understandable. And the player was humiliated because he thought he pulled one over on him, and D'Souza smacked it into the seats and then stood over him, which... So, I mean, there's plenty of blame to go around. And then when he stood over him, which was inexcusable, then the players from Kansas State came and pushed him away, physically made contact with him, and then it went from, as they said in, what was that movie with, you know, the funny movie about the TV station, that Stay Classy, San Diego.
Oh, yeah. Go blank yourself, San Diego.
No. You know, go back to playing with every plane over there.
No, Anchorman.
He said, Stay Classy. Anchorman. Yeah. No, and what he said was, boy, that escalated quickly.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's the line. Yeah, if you're listening, it's obvious that's where I was going, but that's okay.
Well, no.
No, surprise you didn't say, I'll never be hungry again. No, that's Gone with the Wind, but okay.
I knew where you were. You said Stay
Always
Classy,
Always be
Diego.
Closing. Again, good movie line, nothing to do with what we're talking about. Just pulling them out here.
Carpe diem.
Yeah. So that's what's going on. So this fight, I have a call in. I had a visit with Curtis Shaw. Curtis Shaw is the supervisor of officials in the Big 12. And I spoke with him about 11:30 this morning. And I said, look, I know you got a busy day. I said, but any way you could come on with us? He said, I'd be happy to, but I'm not sure the conference is going to let me until they decide to make a ruling on it. I said, well, if you can, I said, let me check with my boss. So he's going to call his boss, who's at a meeting right now. And he said, he'll get back to me. And he said, I don't have any problem coming up. It really has nothing to do with the officials. And he's right. It doesn't have anything to do with the officials. They didn't instigate it. They didn't escalate it. They didn't, you know, I don't know what you would have wanted them to do. They're not like hockey refs. They're going to jump in and start pulling players apart. They called the game. If you think they sucked during the call of the game, whatever, that's your business. But the fact is, the game was over, and then they did their job. Until the players leave the court, they're still under contract, so to speak. They're still working. So as goofy as it was, they had to, you know, pull the players back out of the locker room. For those of you who don't know, the fight escalated to the point everybody left the bench. They threw everybody out. They threw everybody out of the game except for the five players that were on the court for both teams. So there was a gaggle of technical foul shots. Kansas State had to come back. There were only a couple of thousand people still left in the arena. Everybody left by the time they got it straightened out. But the officials doing their job. The authority said they got to bring them back out. They had to shoot these technical free throws, only adding, you know, throwing salt in the wound about the absurdity of the whole thing. And then now technically they have ejections for everybody who was on the bench, whether, you know, either team. And now the league's got to figure out what you want to do with that. Because do they get suspended? And if they do get suspended, you can't suspend all of them at once. Do they stagger the suspensions? I don't know. I mean, so that's what... So, but the point is, I just wanted to ask Curtis from, you know, what he saw and how officials are instructed on how to handle something like that and the danger of something like that, what goes through their mind. I mean, D'Souza picked up a chair. It was ugly. They say, this is, listen, maybe he did. I don't know. So before I think I'm taking a side of Texas, D'Souza made first contact. This is how these things happen. It's Harriet Toe, Joey DeFish, Sammy DeNose. It's your fault. It's your fault. They're both. I give Bill, obviously a guy that Pat doesn't like very much, Bill Self, a lot of credit for at least saying, we're at fault here. Now, they took that out of context because he said, we're at fault here. But he said he did not say we're 100% at fault. What he was smart enough to do was to leave it to the other coach to speak for his team, Bruce Weber. And what he said was, you know, you have to ask Bruce about his guys. But, you know, we definitely made some mistakes. Were they the only mistakes made? Probably not. But I know we made some mistakes, and they did. And D'Souza was, you know, for a guy that was so close to not being able to play at all, pretty cavalier about really putting God knows how much more of his career in jeopardy. I mean, I can't imagine that that's just a one-game suspension. He picked the chair up twice, I think. I mean, it's one of those video clips that is so chaotic, it's hard to you know, you see fists flying, and then you got to stop it, and then you could watch it like 10 times before you really realize, you know, what transpired and who did what. I mean, there was some guy in a suit. I think he was one of the staff members. Did you see that guy come flying over the pile and get thrown like a rag doll to the side?
Yeah, he came in hot. He went down fast.
Yeah. That's two sentences you never want to hear. He came in hot, period. He went down fast. But he did. He was going left to right on your screen if you're watching it at home. He went flying by. So it was ugly. It was really, really, really ugly. And so I was going to see if I could get Curtis on to give us some comments about it. So I don't know. We'll see. He may be able to do it. He may not. I appreciated talking with him.
We do have a couple of guests lined up today.
Okay.
Coming up. Actually, I think that's him calling right now. At 12:40, we have Matt McGavick, who a lot of people in this area know as General Wasp. He was a member of the Crunch Zone, but now he covers Georgia Tech for Sports Illustrated. So he'll join with a Georgia Tech preview coming up next.
Okay.
And then we have Flatmate Thomas, Tom Farmer. We'll have it's We Want to Know Wednesday.
Yeah, it is.
We'll have his fact of the day about 1:15. Eric Crawford at 1:30. And then we missed him yesterday, but we will talk a little NFL with our guy Neil Greenberg from the Washington Post at 2:00.
All right, well, we got a couple of weeks to go, but people are already making bets on these games, so you might as well see if he's got some thoughts on what the best bets might be. I don't know. So we'll see. So it's a busy show today. You can text us at 437-9680 or give us a call, although we don't take many calls, but send us a text. We'll try and work as many of those in to the course of the show. I appreciate some of the comments. Guy says, I agree with you, Bob. This is a very interesting and compelling year in college basketball. My tournament bracket will be filled out with an emphasis on the best coaches. Now, that's an interesting approach. You know what? I used to go to the racetrack, and I didn't know anything about the horses. I'd bet on the jockeys. I knew who the better jockeys were. Those were names I knew. You only have to know about 20 horses. I could know them all. And reading the form was, I didn't know anything about anything. They probably would go broke that way. But it's a thought. You know, why not? Take a look at guys that have won in the postseason. There is definitely a skill. Is the text line open? Yes, of course it is. I'm reading this off the text line, you silly buster. People tell you not to eat on the air all the time, but you still do it. What's the point? I don't know what that means, other than I was talking about who cares what people say. So that would have made my point, wouldn't it? So I'm not sure what that meant, and I didn't eat anything today. So there you go. I'd rather watch college basketball in a year like this one than UK's 38-0 team. Well, I guess you're a UK fan, maybe. UK fan probably like the 38-0. You know, I by the way, since I'm gonna very tepidly defend Mark Blankenbaker, by the way, about Mekhi Becton. All I heard was people around here are guffawed because they love to have fun at Mark's expense for being the Louisville honk, and he takes it in stride. God bless him because they do give it to him pretty good. So I was waiting to hear this cut, and I just what I heard him say forcefully was, if you need a tackle and you don't take this guy, I think it's going to be a big mistake. And I don't. How is that particularly out? I mean, he put him in a class with like Elvis Dumervil and Lamar Jackson. Maybe you think that was overplay. I don't know. Because I found it funny. Like Locke said, well, he's not on any All-American teams. I mean, Locke's the first guy to criticize everybody who's in positions of making votes and authority. And he's the one guy celebrating the guy who didn't vote for Jeter in the Hall of Fame. So what does that prove? I thought that would, for what it's worth, Mark, I'm a little bit, I got your back a little bit here. I'm having a little bit of fun at your expense, but I didn't think it was completely outlandish. I'm going to take a break, and then we're going to come back here, and we got to get a break in, and then we'll talk some Louisville, Georgia Tech preview here on The V Show on ESPN 680-1057. Whoa. So Georgia had a president who was a former peanut farmer, so it's known for their peanuts. And we got Matt McGavick, who's going to join us here, who covers Georgia Tech. You can find him on Twitter at General Wasp. He is going to help us preview the game tonight. But if you go to his Twitter page or whatever the hell you call it, or on Twitter, his Twitter stuff, his Twitter feed, his Twitter posts, whatever the hell you call him, he has one here that says, "It is with heavy hearts that we confirm that Mr. Peanut has died at 104. Now, you're closer to the peanut capital than I am, Matt. What the hell? What's that all about?
I genuinely have no idea what that is all about. That's just something I found while scrolling Twitter. I know that the Mr. Peanut Twitter account can sometimes go a little bit off the rails, but even that kind of threw me off.
There's no excuse for that. I mean, there's no reason for Mr. Peanut to be dead. He's a lovable icon, and quite frankly, I hope this is just a mistake. Maybe it's just another walking peanut.
I think I read that that's going to be like a Super Bowl commercial, and that's some sort of marketing ploy, but I've never come across a marketing ploy that revolves around killing their mascot.
Yeah, exactly. Like, join us this Super Bowl where we decapitate Charlie Brown. You don't want to miss it. I mean, what are you, nuts? What the hell's that all about? All right, Matt, let's talk about this game and this team and this Georgia Tech team who has been playing a lot of people tough. They still are under 500, but, this league is so competitive night in and night after night. Let me ask you from this point of view, when they've played well, what's been the key for them?
The key has been not turning the ball over and starting fast. I know I'll give you an example. In the Virginia game they played this past Saturday, in the first half alone, they went 11 of 18 from the field. When going up against that Virginia team, no one does that well against them. But then the caveat is they turned the ball 13 times over in that first half. I mean, they toned it down in the second half and did it only five times, but then they shot 40%. And then ended up proceeding to choke that game away. But there have been several times where Georgia Tech has spent so much time and energy trying to come back that when it gets to crunch time in the last couple minutes of the game where it's anyone's game, they've spent so much energy that they just are running out of gas. It was the case against Duke. It was the case against Virginia. It was the case against Notre Dame. So what Georgia Tech needs to do and they have trouble doing is starting fast, because they seem to be behind the eight ball more often than not.
You know what's strange about them, though? For a team that's under 500, they've won three road games in conference. How do you explain that?
I really have no explanation for it. It seems, and it's not for a lack of energy down at the McCamish Pavilion, because when Duke came to town, it was raucous, and even against Notre Dame, who's not been all that impressive in league play, it was pretty lively. I really have no idea. And now let's go through their road resume. They face NC State to begin the year. Yeah, that was a good road win. But at the beginning, you have to remember DJ Funderburk was not playing there because I think he was serving a suspension.
Right.
Georgia, the game plan for that game, had Josh Pastor not played Jose Alvarado that game, they might have won, because at that time he was coming off of and just suffering an ankle injury. And that was actually during a stretch where the starting point guard missed 7 of 8 games because of an injury. And he said that had he not played him, they might have won that game, because he ended up with a plus minus of negative 15 and 18 minutes played or something egregious like that. And then at Kentucky, they played them pretty close. I think it was 41-44 with about 10 minutes to go, and then it just kind of slipped away for them. Truth be told, Bob, I can't explain as to why they play better on the road. Maybe they step up with heading to another team's place. I don't know. I really don't know.
Well, the only other thing you can put your hands on is usually teams that play well on the road have good guards, and they do have good guards this team, don't they?
Oh, yeah, they've got really good guards. Pastner has gone on occasion multiple times to say that Jose Alvarado is the best player on the team. He's one of the ACC leaders in assists. I think he has 5 per game. And it's noticeable, whenever Alvarado is not in the lineup, this team is completely different on offense. During the first 9 or 10 games of the season where he was suffering that foot injury, they had no offensive rhythm whatsoever. Mm-hmm. A lot of it devolved to just simple iso ball one-on-one matchups where it was, hey, I got the ball, I'll try and drive against my man, unsuccessful, kick it back out to the perimeter, repeat. That was it. And even in the first couple games when Alvarado came back, it was kind of the same. And it also didn't help that around the same time when Alvarado came back, they were also getting junior forward Jordan Usher back into the fold because he was a mid-year transfer from USC. So that was another chemistry issue. It seems that not a lot gone their way because of injuries and trying to make sure the chemistry is intact. Now, they've said that, no, chemistry is not an issue. We're playing just fine at practice. But when you're missing your starting point guard for the first nine or so games of the season and then your starting forward can't actually see the court until December, yeah, whether you want to admit it or not, there's going to be a little bit of time to get back in the flow of things.
They have played a lot of zone. Have they mixed it up much? What are they doing defensively?
Pastor likes to run a lot of 2-3 and 1-3-1, like kind of hybrid
Yes, it's like a 1-1-3, really. Yeah, that's kind of what they do. Right.
And they kind of switch it on the fly to really give teams fits on the defensive end, and they executed really well. Now, there were a couple times the last few games against Virginia and against Notre Dame where they went to man because they were so good at shooting the three. I know versus Notre Dame they played man a lot because Notre Dame chucks up more threes than most teams in the country. And they had some success. I don't think Notre Dame shot the three ball very well in there, but – there have been some times where there have been defensive lapses on man just because they're not used to playing that as so much as they're used to playing their zone.
It's let me ask you one last question that I think is relevant to the Louisville fans here before we maybe move on to some broader things. Well, I guess this is kind of a broader thing, really. How good are they relative to the other teams you've seen in the league? Because you make a good point. They beat NC State on the road, but NC State was playing without one of their best players. Virginia is, I mean, Tony's proving what a terrific coach he is because that team is so challenged offensively, and yet they've right. still managed to win games. Roy Williams' team is very, very much on the outside looking in, even when it comes to playing in March. So where is Georgia Tech in the pecking order? Somebody referred to them as one of the worst teams in the league earlier today. I don't think that's accurate, but I don't know where they stand exactly. Where do you think they are?
I think it's kind of hard to gauge that just because we truthfully don't know outside of the top three or four teams in the ACC who is who, because North Carolina was picked in the preseason to finish second, and now look where they are. They're on their way to probably shooting for an NIT bid. Pastner said that they're better than 8-10, which I do agree that they are better than 8-10, but they have been committing some really egregious turnovers throughout the entire season. Some have been because of the competition they played, like a Virginia and such. But there have been times where they try and force the fast break and they make dumb passes, or they try and set up, have bad plays run in the half court. This team's main Achilles heel is turnovers. Mm. Because like I said, against Virginia, when they weren't turning it over, they were shooting it really well. Mm-hmm. But they commit almost 17 a game.
Wow.
And they've also struggled with allowing teams to have more offensive rebounds. When you're giving the opponent extra and extended possessions, that's not a winning formula. They've got the pieces in place to, you know, win games in the ACC. Like, they're 31st defensively in KenPom, which is pretty good. I think that's top three or four in the ACC, and they're a team where their energy on the defensive end kind of feeds into their energy on the offensive end. So they have a winning formula there. It's just that they have at times, well, not at times, a lot of times, a struggle to actually execute what they want to achieve, and a lot of that is coming with turning the ball over.
Yeah, well, you know why that's bad news for Georgia Tech? Because if that's true, and if they're live ball turnovers, Louisville's best offense so far this year has been in transition. And if live ball turnovers lead Louisville to get it in their running game, that's going to, you know, you're not even going to be able to get back and set your zone up. And Louisville's been way more efficient in their transition game, probably, in fact, not probably, definitely, than they have in the half court game. So that may be absolutely at the core of the whole thing tonight, is if Georgia Tech can keep from making live ball turnovers.
Oh, yeah. They'll turn the ball over in live ball, but any way you can turn the ball over, they've done it. I know when they were in Hawaii for the 2019 Diamond Head Classics, for some odd reason, it might have been the officiating crew. I'm not one to blame officials. But there were a ton of offensive fouls called throughout that entire weekend, and it seemed like Georgia Tech had three or four offensive fouls per game out there. It's not really an issue anymore. But and then the whole issue with having turnovers in the fast break was more so in the first five or so games of the season. That's kind of gotten a little bit better at times. But the consistent theme throughout the season so far is that if there is a way to turn the ball over, Georgia Tech has somehow found a way to do so. Mm. And as of late, they have still struggled to tone those down.
Well, we'll see how it plays out tonight. How are you enjoying your gig with Georgia Tech? For the people who recognize your name, know you used to be part of the Crunch Zone here in Louisville. So how are you enjoying that gig?
It's definitely a bit of an adjustment. I know Atlanta's a big city, but I truly wasn't expecting how big it really is. And everyone wants to talk about how bad Atlanta traffic is, but I will assert that Nashville traffic is way worse.
Well, I'll say this. You left kind of, I mean, you saw some really good teams, but you used to do a lot of baseball here. While you leave now, not long after, U of L gets ranked number one in the preseason. How about that?
Yeah, it's funny how that works, right? As soon as I leave, they're almost a consensus number one. It's almost like I was holding them back, right?
Not sure I'd go that far, but they are going to be good. No question about that. Hey, it's good to talk to you, my friend. Thank you so much. Continued success there. And, Matt, we'll talk to you down the road. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Bob. Take care.
It was fun to talk some Georgia Tech. Yeah, I think it's going to come down to that. They can be very good or very bad. I mean, I think that's really the bottom line. And he's right. You know, if you look at turnovers, that's what leads to live ball. If they're live ball turnovers, they lead to runouts and in transition baskets. And Louisville's been the best at that, or better at that than half court offense. I don't want to say that's the best thing they do. Their defense is probably the best thing they do, but their transition offense has been better than the half court offense. So, and they're not going to press. You know, Louisville doesn't do that. They don't trap. They don't press. They don't do that stuff. So they're just going to have to hope that it's one of those games where Georgia Tech's throwing it to the wrong team, or, you know, over penetrating and getting in positions where they're in trouble, and then turn them into buckets, because that really was the big story of the first half with Duke. And maybe they can do it again in this one. That certainly would be a big, big boost for Louisville's offense to be able to play in transition, which they're very, very good at doing and have proven to be getting better at also. But I shouldn't say that they've always been good. They struggled early. They had some fast breaks early that were head-scratchingly bad. But they've gotten better and better at it, and that's, you know, part of the development of a team. We talk about that all the time here on the show. Hey, winter is here, and it's definitely cold outside. Keep the warmth in your home with new windows from Universal Windows Direct. You don't want to be pumping heat that's leaking right out through your builder's-grade windows. If you feel some cool air coming through your house, you know what that means? It means you need new windows. Your current windows are just not cutting it. They leak warm air out, let cool air in, causes you to pay more in energy bills. New windows from Universal Windows Direct not only look great, but they're going to keep your home warmer in the winter, cooler in the summer, and give you peace of mind. Don't suffer through another winter in a cold, drafty home. Call my guys at Universal Windows Direct today. They have super spacer technology, keeps the edge of the glass warmer, holds the seal longer, and the windows last up to 5 times longer than other windows. And how about this for a deal? We got all sorts of reasons why you'd want to talk to the people at Universal Windows Direct. Not only is there a large selection of affordable world-class window designs from Universal Windows Direct, that's a great thing. It's not just one size fits all. They're more than just a replacement window company. They've got different designs there. My guys Bill and Mike always back it up, though, with a true lifetime warranty. So no matter which window you select, you're covered for as long as you own your home and 30 years to the next homeowner. That is a guarantee. They also guarantee professional and trustworthy installers who have a focus and passion for what they do. Right now, buy two windows, get two free. Buy six, get six free. Buy 20, get 20 free. There's no limit. It's a BOGO for the best windows you can get. So call 502-822-5764. That's 822-5764. Or go to UniversalWindowsDirect.com. Like me, you'll be saying, I love my windows. We're back with more here at the top of the hour break. We'll take a short time out, tell you who we are, where we are, all those kinds of things. And then we'll continue here on ESPN 680-1057.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded! Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
With UPS, future you gets seriously pumped. As a package handler, you'll have a great job this season. Make up to $20 per hour after bonuses for a 25-hour work week. Future you goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at upsjobs.com.